Hi,
welcome
everybody.
Back.
Welcome. I'm Brian.
I'm Rui.
And we're going to continue with talking about emergency services, LIS, 911, enhanced calling, things of that nature.
Emergency stuff.
Things that are always paramount in a real deployment of enterprise voice. Not to say that in a non-real it's not, but really, if you're deploying enterprise voice, you should be thinking about emergency services.
Right. There's a certain expectation that for voice, people should be able to have the ability to call when they have an emergency and reach the first responders.
Okay, so in this module, we are going to take a look at the location information server. Again, a lot of this you'll see that we talked about in 336. So the call setup and flow, we've already seen the diagram, we'll go over it again. Location policies and how they work and how they interact with emergency services. How to physically implement the LIS or logically implement it, as the case may be. What the address discovery process is, and so now we're talking about third-party products and what the user experience is when we go through this. Okay. So what is location awareness? Well, we'll see that on the next slide, but location awareness is the concept that we know where you're at, right? It's aware of the location. Emergency routing can happen based off that location awareness, not only from a feedback to the end users of where you're at, but also make intelligent decisions based off your location or your sites, as the case may be, based off your networking, your subnetting, of how we're going to route you.
And that's what we refer to E911 as well, right?
The E911 is the extra piece that we add on when we get to the services beyond. But what's really key to point out, because we get a lot of feedback from people outside of North America saying, what's the point of me learning LIS and learning 911 emergency services when I can't leverage the 911 enhanced because that's only a North America thing? In fact, that's not true. There's a lot of functionalities and features, and we'll go over some of that within here, that you can leverage, not only just locating your location to let people know where you are, but we can set physical trunk-based routing based off your location to various fixed hard assets. What we can't do is change that when you are out at Starbucks or, well, I say Starbucks. I'm in Seattle. It's what you say, Starbucks. Or any other location that's in the public Wi-Fi, whether it be at your house, whether it be at a some sort of store.
Hey, Brian, I have a joke for you about Starbucks. Do you know when you reach the end of the world?
When?
When you see two Starbucks across the street from each other.
So we're at the end of the world here in Seattle, then, because that's every other corner.
That's right.
Some every corner. It is
very. We reached the end of the world, the beginning and the end.
All in one place. So location awareness. Location awareness is driven by the LIS service. We look at the information that comes over, and in this building to third floor, that's what's being pushed by the location service, the LIS database. Now that information has been previously entered into a wire map. We've indicated by some mechanism of an identification, whether it is your BSID, maybe it is your IP subnet that you're on, maybe it is LLDP med, some method we're using to determine where you're at, and then we do a lookup based off that location. It populates the user location automatically in the client. When it's pushed by policy, it's just there. They can't really change it. They can change the preview name, but the actual address never gets changed. It affects the emergency, the way emergency calls route when we have a location awareness. So again, if I'm in this case, building 2, and I dial 911, maybe I want it to the 911 call the egress out of my 3131 building. But when I am calling from building 18, maybe I want that to come out of one Microsoft way. I want the call to actually physically egress from that location. It really is up to you. And again, that's without the 911 enhanced back end. That's just depending on how you're doing your locations and your profiles and your designing. And then its core functionality, while it's nice to see your address and it's nice to have that information, we don't really have to have an address to get us to get our location-based routing. But if we do plan on using the 911 enhanced, the E911, we are going to need to have that information in order to reduce charges. Because if we don't have it, we'll get dinged every time we call emergency services because we won't know where we're at. So we'll see a little bit more about that. So how do we set up emergency routing? Well, emergency routing is based off a location policy. Now, this location policy is back on the network configuration tab within the control panel, or PowerShell, of course, and it dictates what profile what PSTN usage and thereby which route should be used to make the calls when we're making these various outbound emergency calls. It also dictates things like when we're in a location profile, do we want to enforce that a location is entered or a disclaimer is displayed? Maybe we need to say when you call 911 and you're in Europe, that really means you're calling 112. And so that it goes to the North American gateway. So it's figuring out how the location can figure out where you are based off your sites within, and this would be sites, very key, within networking, not sites within control panel of link of your active or topology builder, or your sites based off of Active Directory. I mean, it has nothing to do with that. These are sites you've built specifically for call admission control and potentially specifically just for your location policies.
Right. It's distinguished from your AD sites. This has nothing to do with your AD sites. This is referring to really your IP subnet sites
that we create.
Yeah, it's a bit of confusing. We're overloading the term site, obviously, but it's based off your IP subnet so that if you have a specific IP subnet for a particular building, then that's what it's referring to.
So when we look at the voice routing flow again, everything's grayed out other than what matters. What matters is the user makes a call, and yes, it is determined to be an emergency call. Now, the emergency calls do not need to be normalized within your dial plans. They're normalized by just simply being part of the location profile. So if I enter 911, then when I dial 911, off it goes into my location profile and gets picked up as being flagged as being an emergency call. It then bypasses all of our other steps. We don't go into normalization. We don't look at global dial plans. We don't look at anything else. We immediately say, is there a location policy associated with this call? And then send it to the route. So the person's already authorized. And you'll notice our authorization, it happens at our voice policy. That authorization's gone. Every person has the right to call an emergency number, regardless of what you're in, which also means a user does not have to have that this particular location policy as part of their profile of their voice policy associated to their route. This is independent, 100%, and it's typically recommended that it is an independent, completely unused policy that's only used for your emergency calls. And you'll look at the control panel, it'll say unassigned to anything, but it really isn't. It's the location profile that's using this policy, not the voice routing itself. Okay. So what makes up E911? Well, the location policies, which we went over, they're the ones that can be location aware, assuming we've created sites and subnets and associated location policies. It's emergency numbers that we have created that are assigned to those location policies. And optionally, you can have stuff happen when an emergency number is called. So for instance, if I was sitting at my desk and I dialed 911 here in North America, I could also have an instant message pop up to alert somebody, whatever that somebody is. Usually it's your security desk or the front desk, something of that nature, that says, hey, Brian just called 911 from this address physically. And the address would be pushed back to whatever was pushed from my LIS information. Also, if you're using the 911 enhanced service, we can then set up a bridge back to the emergency services that can be a private bridge that they don't know you're there or that you can participate in a one-way or two-way call, but that only works, and stress only works. You can play with it as much as you want. You can enable it all you want. Unless you're using a supported 911 emergency carrier that's getting this PitiFlow information to them to realize that they're supposed to call back, nothing's going to happen. So you can try it all you want. It's not going to work. But the IM stuff does work regardless. So that's nice. The LIS server, what is that? That's the location information server, and that is what contains all your information about your wire maps. What subnet is associated to which address? What switch and port is associated to which address? And then once you have all that information input, is it validated against the MSAG? And again, the MSAG is a North America thing, but it's the master street address guide that once you have your system provisioned with a third-party 911 enhanced type E911 party, they will validate the addresses and flag them in the database as being true, valid information. And what they're doing is they're updating the way that you've entered your addresses, if necessary, to the way that they are listed in the 911 database. So there is zero question or time with verifying data. It's the exact address that would be dispatched to emergency services. And all of that's validated. And then when you dial 911, that information is passed up to the E911 person that you're dealing with. So that's what it's made up of. Really, it's your policies and the LIS server. It's really not that complex as far as what systems are involved. You could have third-party LIS databases if you wanted. You could, if you're using 911 Enhanced or their solutions, you could have some additional components that are maintaining some switch information, and we'll get a little bit more into that here in the next couple of slides. So how do we set up the 911, and how does calls flow around the world? So 911 configuration. All right, the whole idea here is this is supposed to build, and I don't know that it will. So we won't try. The admin configures the front-end server to be LIS configured. He enters into the wire map all kinds of information. And again, this could be information that you're putting in that is your wireless controllers. It could be your LLVP med configuration. It could also be a simple subnet, which is the simplest way to do it. If you're on the subnet, you're in this address. And that works well for buildings, not down to the cubicle, but from a free solution, if I am in building 4, 5th floor, west wing, because that has its own unique subnet, then I can do that. Now, if building 4 has an entire subnet all into itself, it's not going to work so well, and we're going to end up being only able to pinpoint you and narrow you down to building 4. But that's still better than nothing. Once that information is entered into the front end, you then see that it's sent over to the MSAC database. It's a command that's done within PowerShell that says validate the information, and then he returns his information saying, yep, it's good to go. Or here's some corrections you need to make. You do want to check the UCOIP page to make sure that the 911 company that you're dealing with is listed on the list as being a link enhanced provider for 911 services. If they're not E911 certified, they may have their own solution, but it's not going to be supported or tied directly into the Link infrastructure and utilize the LIS solution as it was designed within Link. So the location discovery, how does that work? Well, I have a user that logs into the network, and when I do, this caller, it's really anybody that's logging in, so it's the endpoint. When they log into the front end, they log in and they indicate that, well, hey, what's your location? And then they talk back and say, this is where I'm at from information perspective, and he passes back, okay, this is your location as we have your address listed in the database. If there is nothing found, then nothing's returned. If there is something returned, great, you have a location. That's the idea.
And this is the mapping from the physical IP subnet to a physical address.
Right, or from a wireless AP.
Wireless AP, yes, to, a wireless right. to a physical it's address.
Or LLVPMed could even be involved. But it is fairly limited when we don't use the third-party applications to figure out where you're at. It's limited to very broad areas of
right.
communication.
And it's not going to tell you, unless you really have very specific subnets, but it's not going to tell you on the third floor of building
right.
X in the on the west wing, right?
Yep. So then we would go to place an emergency call. How does that work? Well, caller starts off on the slide, and then he contacts the front-end server. The front-end server, because we've gone ahead and created an IM that says notify in the event of an emergency, the security officer sends an instant message off to the security officer. Okay, that's where it stops from their perspective. They just get a pop-up IM that says, hey, Brian, and it's from the caller, as an FYI. This person sends this person an IM saying, hey, I just went ahead and initiated an emergency call, and this is my location. If the caller is a security officer, they get a pop-up from themselves to say, hey, you just called 911. And so when you're testing, that happens all the time, FYI. So then from the front end, we make the call out to the PSTN trunk. Now this PSTN trunk or SIP trunk or whatever that communication happens to be is all based off the 911 operator, the E911 service provider. They're going to provide a particular SIP trunk specific to their communications, and typically two plus a backup PSTN call, as defined by the requirements of E911. Assuming we make the emergency call over the SIP trunk, it'll hit their SBC, which is a specialized SBC, which then does a lookup of the PIDAflow information that was sent over. If that information is marked as being true, that would mean we validated against the MSAC database and it is a known location and you're good to go. It automatically routes it to the correct PSAP based off your location. If it's marked false, that means either it hasn't been validated or you're at Starbucks and you've manually inputted your address. It's not validated that you really are where you are. That call will be intercepted by a help desk call person, and they will validate what you have, if anything, entered in. You don't have to even have anything. You just call 911. You're going to end up at this operator. The operator will then get you the information and or validate it, send it off to the PSAP. And then this security here, this last leg of five, is if you have the conferencing feature enabled, then when this call is made, you're bridged into the security desk to either hear one-way or two-way audio based off your configuration. So again, that's what happens at the 911 operator level. It's not what's configured, and Link isn't making the call on your behalf. So that's why you can't test that unless you actually have an E911 solution in place. Okay. So how do we design these location profiles? What is it that we need to consider? So there is the disclaimer. That's the first thing we need to think about. The location profile is what happens when a user logs into Link and they either get or do not get their location. And then what happens when they make a call that is deemed an emergency service call, what happens or doesn't happen. So the disclaimer itself can be something that you create manually within PowerShell and say something to the effect of policy of company XYZ or Contoso states that you must enter your address when traveling. Or maybe you decide to follow the Office 2013 crew and take a more lighthearted approach and say something to the effect of, hey, it looks like you're traveling. I don't recognize your address. Per policy, we need you to input that. Please do so. Whatever you want to say. You can be hardlined. You can be softlined. You can decide that it is required. It isn't required. The pop-up keep comes up or can be dismissed. That's all part of your location disclaimer. And that's where you see here in location where it says required, or not required. Then we'll have our required, disclaimer, but we get to that later, so it doesn't really matter. Okay, is it enabled for 911? If we click yes, then we can go ahead and the location profile is valid and good to go. Here you can see the PSTN usage is set to E911 usage. That's a usage that was created on the back end, and it's a usage that's going to be tied to a trunk, but not to a voice policy typically. It's going to be hanging out there only to be used by this location profile. This first digit here is your 911 dial number. Again, in North America, is 911. Dial mask is any other number that you dial. It automatically normalizes it right back to the 911 dial number. So it allows you to support, if you're an international company or you just like to do so, put additional numbers that if somebody dials, or perhaps there is a good example would be you have a security desk number that you dial when there's an emergency. Maybe you want to move it away from the security desk, but you want to still capture that number as an emergency number. Okay, so maybe it's 004 in this company, or maybe it's, that's probably bad, maybe it's 400. Well, you could put 112,400, and 112 or 400 would both turn into 911. And again, these are not numbers that would be normalized otherwise. They're caught prior to ever hitting any normalization rules. So if that's not what you wanted to do, if you don't want to call 911, don't enter that number there, because that's, if, as you saw in a previous slide, as we look here, it bypasses any other normalization. We're not looking at anything. If it hits one of those emergency numbers in this queue, and that's your 911-112-400, it immediately routes the call out to the profile that you've selected, and off things go. So keep that in mind. It is a emergency for an emergency reason, and calls are going to always happen whether you want them to happen or not, because you've told it that it's an emergency solution. Okay. So going back to the location profile, the scope of the profile could be defined as well. Now the scope here is a little different, and I'm not sure why scopes here are different than what they were before, but there's user policies that can be assigned to a network site, but there's also user policies that can be assigned to users. And they're both called user policies. So you create a user policy if you want to create a user policy, and when we come back to this location, because it's on the site tab here, we can specify a particular location profile. If we do, the user profile we just created is actually assigned to the site, not to a user. That allows you to, whenever you roam from location A to location B, you get a different subnet. You're identifying a different site to get a different policy. Now, that's really, really, really cool and important, especially when you think, okay, I've got three buildings and there's no way we're going to pay for or use or have the infrastructure to put enhanced 911 in place. However, if I'm in building one, I want it to go out this POTS line and I have a particular gateway. It's a little, let's say it's an audio codes MP114. It's cooked up to a POTS line. And when I make a call out, emergency services go out that location. It's a location of 50. That's fine. I don't need to know the desk you're in. I need to know what building you're in. It's a physical street address. Well, if I go to building two, which is 25 miles away, and I'm associated to the pool or the location of, maybe it's one pool, but I'm associated to the users that are in building one. Well, if I dial 911, I don't want to go in on building one's POTS line. I want on building two to have its own MP114 with its own POTS line. And based off subnet, it knows to route it out that particular gateway. Maybe that's all that gateway's there for, but we've done those solutions where we just put up these little analog gateways in locations where we want emergency services to be provided to them, but we don't want to pay for a full-blown solution, and it's a way to, that we can address that. Probably more important is if you do have 911 enhanced enabled or E911 enabled in your environment, and you have an international company, if I have somebody that comes over from let's say a European office, and they are traveling in to North America, and they dial 211, we don't want that going out and making a call emergency services somewhere in EMEA. That doesn't make any sense. And it should take on the services and the locations of the current location. We also want that to translate so that it doesn't go out 211 in North America. That should go out, be caught, because we capture that here in the dial mask, if we look at the screen here. But we actually send it out 911. In EMEA, this would be opposite, right? This would be 112, and the dial mask would be 911. So if I am a North America user and I travel to my EMEA office and I dial 911, it will get me emergency services 112 in that location. So that's how the location profile can travel per site. Now, if we assign the user policy at the user level, which is an option, we overwrite the site information because it's lowest on the list. I don't know. So there's user policies assigned to the network site. Oh, I'm sorry, network site overrides user. That's good to know. The user side, I don't know, but there's potential reasons of why you would want the user policy assigned to a user. Typically, we don't. We want it to be dynamic based off their location. But if you are one location, so maybe now there is no multiple network sites to matter, maybe it's you have a boss that doesn't want to have to put a disclaimer on and tell their location, and another one that auto-completes their location based off of your wire map diagram, and that is the difference of how you're using it. But LIS doesn't have to be just emergency services, it's a location service. And so that is utilized by emergency services, but there you go. Then we have topology, site policies, and global policies as things go up, as always. And when you make a site policy within the location policy, that's what it's called. There's a global site and a user. Just keep in mind, user can be a user, or it can be a network site that's created in the network sites. It has nothing to do with Active Directory sites. It has nothing to do with link sites. This is networking sites that are created in the network control panel selection. So yeah, three different locations we're using site names, but sorry. It is what it is, and we move along. So PSTN usage creation. This is where we're looking at how do we make a PSTN usage for something that we don't want a voice policy for. Now you could go into a voice policy. You could go create a new PSTN usage. You could then associate it to a route, hit OK, then go back to that voice policy and remove it from that particular voice route, and it's going to still be there. It's no longer associated with that voice policy, but it still exists. Alternatively, we can use PowerShell. PowerShell is always our friend. And as we see here, we can see the set CSTN piece in usage and add to a PSTN usage an emergency call usage. And what we're doing is we're creating a voice route with a policy. And we'll see that actually much easier on our next slide. So if we do a new CS voice route, we're going to call it emergency. The number pattern is plus 911. The PSTN usage is this emergency call usage, and the gateway is whatever gateway we've selected. That's now created a voice route with that emergency PSTN usage we created prior. So you can't make a PSTN usage without having a usage. You can't create the route without, I mean, it's the cart for the horse kind of thing. So we make the one and then we do the other and then we add them both together. You can alternatively, you could go to the voice policies, create one, add one, do it all yourself manually. So
you can create from both locations.
Yeah, you can do it from the GUI. You just have to remember to remove it from the voice policy that you've created because it should not be associated with the voice policy as best practice. And it's possible that you only have one route, and so it really doesn't matter. All calls are going out this way because we're not using enhanced 911, but as a best practice, you'd still break that up into two different routes just so that if things do change in the future, you don't impact emergency services and how they're configured. Okay. Now we ask what's Bitaflow and what is that information? And that is the information that we send along with your call. That's your location, that is your address, your street address, your MSAG information, as well as potentially your subnet and other information that's associated with your logging and location. If you're going to use 911, it's highly important that on the trunk that you just created, that you actually enable Bitaflow support. If you don't, then that information is never sent along. That's how we control where information goes. It's one of those little extra steps that if you're working with an E911 supported offering, they're going to have the setup guide and stuff how to do things, but it's only used when we're talking to someone on that end. If XML data goes along in the SIP communication, nothing else is going to use it if they don't know how to use it or what it is. It's just data that's coming along for the ride. So. Okay. How do we implement LIS? Is it that difficult? Huh. Well, not really.
No, LIS, that's not a Link service, is it?
It is an application running on the Link server, yes, on the front-end server.
But you need a third-party provider as well, right?
Not necessarily. Nope, it's built into it directly. So we can use LIS if we want. The only time we'd want to tie in something different, which we'll see here, is if we want to do the MAC address, the match of a switch to a port. And the solutions are provided by the third parties that give us the ability to bring that in. And it's basically a database that, well, we'll get to it, but talks to your switches, and then you talk to the switches, and then we figure out where you're at, and that's how we tie you together. So, okay. So part of the Link Server 2013 Web Components, it's just part of it, which means by default, because it's part of web services, it's load balanced and highly available if you've built an HA solution. It's going to move around. You've got to think of impacts if you're moving it around from a pairing perspective, but it is part of the web service components. In order of what matters when we're matching things is, first we see, are you on Wi-Fi? And if you are, do we know your BSS ID? If we do, and you've added that to your wire map, we can go ahead and match it, and we can say you're wirelessly on this area, and then depending on how you've entered the location, it's going to say something like, I am in the cafeteria, I'm in the West Wing on Wi-Fi, because I don't know where you are, but I know you are within this parameter because I'm only projecting my Wi-Fi, so far. After that, we're going to go to LLDPMed. Now, phones, the phones all support LLDPMed, the Aries phones. The Windows 7 did not natively. Windows 8 does support LLDPMed natively. So in theory, you could use your location based off LLDPMed, which is talking to the switch and figuring out what port you're on the switch, much to use an SNMP type communication without actually doing it. So it allows you to get more granular information about yourself. The switch from LLDPMed could be another layer. Rather than giving you back your actual switch and your port, maybe it's just your switch. And maybe that's good enough again for you. So if you're on the switch, that means you're in this building or in this wing or in this floor, as the case may be. And then finally, we can go ahead and add an actual subnet. Now the subnet could be 192.168.100.0/24. If that's your IP, this is your address. And then we can make that mapping. And if all of those things have been exhausted and none of those items exist in your LIS database, we go on to this next option, which is the match of a switch to port using a third-party solution. If you sign up with one of these providers that offer E911, they will provide servers and services that will go out, scan your switches and ports that you've configured with SNMP, and then they'll be able to figure out, based off of your switch and port, and where you're located on the switch and port, that's where you're physically at. So right. Now your database gets massive because now you're saying switch 1, port 24 is this location. Switch 5, port 25 is this location. The physical ports aren't going to change. who's plugged into them may very well change. And so you have to maintain that. If you move a lot of networking around and reconfigure your networking closets and switch closets, this could be very cumbersome. But
that's also, not going to happen very often.
It's also the solution. Hopefully not. It's also the solution that is no different than what today's PBX 911 solution is. If you think about it, I put in a phone system and I put in this handset. This handset is at this port, this location, and that's when they dial 911, how I know where they're at. That's exactly what we're doing. We're just having to kind of go back in time to make our solution fit that exact practice, because the only thing that we can guarantee is if you're plugged into a particular switch port, we know where that port drop is, hopefully, and therefore we know the physical address you're at. And then that can get down to your physical cube you're in when you're at that level. Right now we're not guessing that you're on a floor. Now we can say building 14,
floor 5,
cube 2048. And that's exactly where you're calling from when that 911 emergency was set off. That's nice. That gets down to granular, very granular solution. But again, that's brought in through something third party. The PowerShell and GUI is how we do the majority of the administration. It's just more of an FYI that we follow the address validations of Nina I2. There's nothing, all of the bin flow stuff that we're sending follows standards. We're not creating anything. The LIS, because of that, the LIS database adheres to a schema that is generally accepted, and third-party solutions can be brought in to replace or supplement the LIS solution if that's what you wanted to do. So when we're configuring LIS, we have to figure out what addresses we're at, right? We need to figure out where a physical address is associated to one of these things, the subnet switch, ports, whatever the case may be, and the size of the data will correspond, as it says, to where we are. So if we're wireless, we need to make our location maybe a little bit more broad than if we have an actual switch and port, which we can get down to a desktop or even a cube level. Do this via CSV. Don't try to manually enter one line at a time, or even small implementations, we'll just write the command 10, 15 times in OneNote and just paste it in. That's great, because very little is changing. But when you're dealing with, let's say, a corporation of 10,000 or a university of 50,000 or 100,000 drops, talk about confusion and the maintenance nightmare if you were trying to do this manually. You take a CSV file, you put in the data, you validate the data, then you use that to import using PowerShell and then create the tasks and let the thing run. It's going to take a bit as it creates all of this wire mapping. And then remember, maintain, maintain, maintain. As things add, removed, change, things are going to have to be changed in your environment. It's important that that's maintained. Otherwise, the whole 911 enhanced solution that you've put in place isn't going to be very enhanced, right?
It's going to be outdated very quickly.
From the address management perspective, once you've configured and put your addresses in, you have to validate it. And they're going to give you a login of some sort of credentials to allow you to talk to their server. They'll also expect to general IPs of where you're coming from. And you'll be validating it. And they're going to kick back error correction saying, that is not right. That is not a valid address. Incorrect zip code. That street doesn't exist in the city. Whatever the case may be. And you've got to get the information correct prior to it being flipped to the true value within the database. Here's an example of the configuration if we're doing it from the simplistic perspective. Now, this is anybody can go and do. It doesn't take any third party. It doesn't take any additional hardware. You can go and set your subnets and the locations of those subnets up within Link. Now, again, this is a nice functionality and feature from those that have multiple buildings. Multiple buildings typically means multiple subnets. And if people roam between these buildings, when I jump on the LAN in Building 1, it shows that I'm in Building 1. When I jump on the LAN on Building 12, it shows I'm in Building 12. And if I go to 33, it's going to show that I'm in 33. It's nice. It's nice to show where you're physically at from an address perspective, even if you're not using that for emergency services. So this can all be done through the LIS web service. When we set the subnet, we specify the subnet. And you'll notice there is no, in the LIS world, there is no masking that we're giving. So it's a very broad. It's not a super refined solution. We give the description and the location. That's what's shown up within your Link client. And then, again, company name, addresses. And you'll notice that we have house numbers, we have street addresses, but we also have other stuff that's not shown, such as suffixes and post-directional, pre-directional things. So if we're 3609 is our number, that's great. That's our house number. It's house, even that's just what it's called. And we're 173rd Court Northeast. Well, then we're going to be, our street's going to be 173rd, and then our pre-directional is Northeast. We also see a bunch of addresses, and I think Washington's and Seattle's famous for having North, Northwest, bringing up various addresses. So you're North 36th, 134th, North 24th, over the top and under the bridge. And all of this kind of information comes in, and it's all addressable within here. And again, it's all addressable from at least the North America standard, because we have to be able to fit it into the MSAD database standard. And this is the exact same names and locations and how things are listed within the 911 database. This is how they're going to read out the address. That's how it's going to come over. Okay. When we go to validate an address, if the address is not valid, and in this particular instance, we're saying 100 Bell Red Road Northeast in Redmond, 98052, is not valid. That's for whatever reason, something's not right, and it'll kick back a report to say what it would either suggest or what is completely wrong and what is the problem. But the advantage of doing the validation and having the 911 is, again, when we dial 911, it goes directly to the PSAP, or the, if you think of it as a 911 call center, or the police department that's handling your calls.
It's first responders.
That's your PSAP. They're the ones that are, if you want, you want to go directly to them if at all possible. You don't want to have to be directed and then redirected. It just takes time. And you don't want to be liable for that time as well. That's another issue to take into account. If we're talking emergency services, we're talking about it's nice to be able to get to 911 or emergency services quickly. Don't discount the legality of not being able to get to 911. Also don't discount the legality that there's certain locations within North America that it is a requirement, if you have a voice over IP system, to have a solution in place. So it's not even an option. And that can be cities, that could be districts within cities, that can be counties, states, whatever the case may be. The concept is that this will go North America law required at some point, and then ideally global will be taken on, and we can get one big nice database and one solution internationally. Whether it happens, I don't know, but we're getting there. Okay, address discovery. So this is where we talk about what happens when the client looks for his various addresses. And we go over this a couple of various times in various different ways, but we want to stress that there is a list of things we're trying to figure out where you're at prior to us going to a resolver or a third-party solution, which is at the very bottom of the list, which is kind of ironic. I would have thought that we would have more specific and then go least specific, but in this case, it's not necessarily, because if we enter a subnet and that subnet covers your location on your switch port, you're done. You don't actually get the lookup to find out which switch port you're on, because we've already made a solution. And that's the way it is. So, but the last lookup happens to be the third-party lookup when we go to the solution. Okay. So we stress again, LLDP is not supported on Link Windows 7 and earlier. It is on Windows 8, and it is on the phones dynamically. If that's something you want to use and something you want to leverage, that's there. The downside of Windows 7 and before and phones, if you do decide to do LLDP med and LLDP configurations to find out where you're at, the link layer discovery protocol, if you use that as your protocol for some and not for others, that may be what's appropriate, it may not. Just keep that in mind. You're managing the solution, how it's best to manage your solution. And switches have to support LLDP. If they don't, then it really doesn't matter that you want to use it. The switches don't know anything about it. They're not going to pass the protocol information, and they're not going to pass the port information back to the requester. But we're going to request it. It's just a matter of, will you use it? The database of LIS initiates the request. We do have here the MAC. It's configured. It is set via CS Web Service Configuration MAC Resolver. It's a third-party solution. It's something that we want to set if we're using a 911 enhanced solution. If no location's found, we can send it to an external database, a third party. And you can see secondary location, source URL is what? And it's going off to another web service to go do a lookup. I've never seen that deployed. I know it can be, but I've never seen anybody use it. But maybe I just haven't been around the block enough. I don't know. But why would you not use LIS? Why would you keep two databases? And maybe there's a third party that existed with your existing PBX you want to leverage, maybe. I don't know. But anyway. When we use the Mac, how this works is Link doesn't natively do anything. It's actually taking your information and saying, hey, this is my IP address. What's my location? So because we've set in the previous solution, and we'll push back here, this Mac Resolver URL, because this is set on the web service, and he knows it, and he doesn't match any of the other ones, he takes your IP address, and off he goes to the web service. The web service, again, is doing an SNMP lookup. It's querying all of the IPs and the related ports, and he has an up-to-date knowledge of all the switches. And when you pass in, hey, I'm 192.168.13.2, he says, oh, you're on this switch 24, port 4, and passes that on back to the LIS. LIS then does a lookup of switch 22, port 4, and says, oh, based off that information and based off what you've entered into the LIS database, this is your physical address, and types back your address. So you have an address for every single port on every single switch in order for this to work. And that's, again, where it can be fairly cumbersome. So what is a Mac Resolver? Again, it is the appliance. It will always come. It's generally called the PDM, the Phone Discovery Manager. And the PDM is one or more appliances, more if you're going to do high availability. And it's just a web service application.
And it's provided by a third party?
It's provided by the third party. That's something that's outside. So 911 Enabling's Mac Resolver is called the PDM. And yeah, that's how it works. So their product will maintain the database and do the lookups and return the information. It's designed to work hand in hand with LIS and with Link Server. Remote users, how does that work then? So because LIS is not an exposed service through the internet, so if we're coming through the edge and we request our location, we're not going to get anything back because we can't request it, we can't get it. It's not something that we provide on purpose. So that means if you have added your CEO's home address and their subnet to your LIS database and he's coming in over the edge, it's not going to work. Now, if he's on your physical WAN via some kind of VPN. Sure, why not? I guess that's going to find his location. And VPN, we mean a site-to-site type VPN. We don't ever recommend VPN for communications, but anyway, that's a whole other story. We get into that in networking, so we won't want to waste that. That's tomorrow's fun. Yay. So because we can't pull back automatic information, and if we, and on our disclaimer, we say that it's required to put in an address, it's going to have its little X pop-up that says, hey, go ahead and show us. And we'll actually see that in just a couple of slides. I have some slides to show the user experience. That's very next. So the users then get to freehandly type in their address. This is no different than if you had entered an address yourself and not validated it against the MSAG. It's an unvalidated address. So when you dial 911, that will always be intercepted, or emergency services, it's always intercepted by the call center to validate the address that you have entered and then a route appropriately to the correct PSAP. And that, while it may seem like a speedy solution, it is really a great solution. It means you can call 911 or emergency services from anywhere in the United States, North America, and you'll be able to get to the emergency center, the PSAP that is closest to your physical location from a Link phone, from your whatever device you're at, sitting at your computer or Aries device or whatever the case may be. So what is the user experience? How does this look when we go to manually log in? So here's our location required. So is the location required? Great. And then we have this little one on top. Set your location said, nothing's here. And by notifications, we're talking about this little exclamation point, this little clear box. They don't exist. There's no emphasis to setting your location if you have your location required set to no. Users aren't prompted to do anything. If location is set to required, the UI pops up the exclamation point and the X and can be dismissed. You can just click on this little X right here and it just goes away and now it looks like set your location. Okay. If you do disclaimer, the UI provides the same look, but if you hit X, a little pop-up comes up and says, are you sure you want to do this? This is the one that can be overridden, so you I don't know, are you sure you want to do this? If your company subscribed, that's very generic. And if you have actually subscribed, you probably want to put something more about your policies, and you can be friendly or not friendly or however the case may be. But it's always here. And every time you sign in, these locations, it does not affect the call. If I do not fill in the set your location information, it doesn't prevent me from making calls or making emergency calls. But it is a nag that's put up for you to look at. When we dial, the experience is slightly different. So emergency number is entered, and here you'll notice on this particular screen, someone decided to call the European number of 112. When they dialed, a plus was automatically appended to 911. We didn't enter plus in the location profile. We only entered 911, but we normalize it, and off we go. And that's sent off to whatever location profile and to whatever PSTN usage, and then corresponding route that we've specified. In the call dialog, there is a notification that this is an emergency call. So they're very well aware that the call they're making is an emergency call, whether they meant to or not. We are notifying the user that they are.
It's nice to do that, because if you make a call to an emergency call by mistake, you know, you can hang up.
Hopefully before it actually connects.
Connects, yes. Yeah,
ideally. But I will say, if you do make this, the security desk notification will go off regardless, even if you emergency hang up the call. If you just dial it, hit send stop, too late. We've already sent the IM. We're that good. So this IM is going to be called up, and you'll notice it comes from Amy. And how funny, Amy's not in a call. That's interesting. She just called 911 and she's available. Well, that's because she hung up, and you may want to go ahead, get back to her and say, you know, reprimand or joke, whatever the case may be. Your culture, you do what you want to do. But you'll notice a couple of things. This is exactly what's being pushed over to the 911 system. So you have your house number, your pre-directional, your road, your street suffix. A1 is your city. A3 is your city. A1 is your state. Your location is what you've called your location. That's a freeform field you've put in. And then your PC is your zip code. So that's exactly the information we're sending in XML data. We're just capturing it and sending it to whatever emergency security desk we've told it to do. And then again, if we've pulled it and you're using 911 enhanced solution, we've told it to make a call. And it can be one way, it can be two way. Either way, the 911 is going out on its own, and if that partner is the one that makes the call. You cannot test this without a partner solution in place. It just doesn't work. So with that, that's 911 enhanced, or E911, enhanced 911, there we go, location information services, how it all ties together. Don't use it. Use it. For nothing else, use it for location services.
Right, and don't forget, you have to have a partner for the call to go out to the PSAPs.
Yes, and with that, we will take a short break, and we'll be back to wrap
for our last
up,
module
with Rui, so I can take a breather and breathe.
No, you're doing such a great job. Let's have you keep it up.
So we'll be back. Thank you so much.